Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Allen blitzes. Manning to play fake. Allen will sack Peyton Manning back at the 14-yard line. He gets up and throws the ball, and it's completed to Emmanuel Sanders. Emmanuel Sanders catches it and runs past midfield into Pittsburgh territory. Peyton went down to avoid the sack, and they're saying he wasn't touched by Allen. He got back up and threw a strike to Emmanuel Sanders. 34 yards in the play. That's one of the craziest plays I've ever seen in my life.
Dave Logan with a call on KOA Radio in Denver. Kevin still complaining, saying that Manning took a deliberate fall and the play was over. And it's just, no, Kevin.
It looked like he was sliding into second base. I'm just saying, no, I did not complain about that. I thought it was the right call.
You should see the text messages, the whining, the complaining.
It was the right call. I was just praying. I was praying just a little stitch of the glove touch Peyton Manning, but no.
I was a neutral observer. I thought it was interesting. You're, meanwhile, finding religion on plays. All right.
Didn't work on that one.
No, evidently not. All right. Nathan Davis, head basketball coach at Bucknell, now joins us. Coach, welcome. Great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you all.
Same thing. Same thing with us. We really like you. We do. I enjoy having you on every week. I enjoy the conversation very much.
Thank you very much. Meanwhile, for you,
it kind of feels like a hostage situation on your part, but I understand that. that just means you're like everybody else. Oh, now you're stretching. Okay, let's get to your team. It's the first time you're going to have to ask them a little bit to bounce back. What were a couple things in the end? Is it just a question of the fact that Colgate hit shots because it just seemed like they were hot all day?
Well, I think you got to give Colgate credit for making the shots. We did not do what we were supposed to do to prevent those shots. I obviously didn't get it across to our guys properly in practice, what we were supposed to do, and then we didn't carry it over to the game because we were big going on the game when we wanted to make sure that they understood that threes killed and twos hurt, and we let them get 28 threes off, and they made 13 of them. They're a good shooting team. They're a good shooting team, and we knew that going in, and we just didn't get it done. But at the same time, they got open, but you got to give them credit for knocking those in. But we got to do a better job all around.
And really, the final 5 minutes, they fired in one three after another. Where was the breakdown there as you saw it?
Two of them were on our ball screen defense. They slipped out of it, and we didn't do the right thing there as far as who was guarding who and left them open. And then one was a drive. We let the guy go the wrong way, and then the wrong guy helped in, leaving the guy open in the corner for what was just too easy of a look. So, again, we just didn't execute what we were trying to do, and they made us pay for it.
Defensively, I know defense is really important to you, and we've talked about taking your defense and getting offense out of it. Are you still doing that in a way where you feel good about getting offense from your defense?
Well, going into Saturday, I would have said yes, but Saturday was not such a good defense.
It was good
in the first really 15 minutes. We did a good job, and we just did not sustain it whatsoever. And gave away too many points and couldn't get a rhythm going. A lot of offense because we're all taking the ball out of the basket.
With what you do, do you have the ability now with certain units on the floor where you can disguise what you're doing a bit defensively, especially with the shot clock being 30 seconds?
There are times we do, and really with everyone on the floor, we play man-to-man, we play matchup, and we can mix and match and show one and really be playing the other. It's something that we've gotten better at, still got a ways to go with it, but really with every guy we put on the floor, we should be able to do that, yes.
Does disguising defenses because of a shorter shot clock help you a bit because it takes them maybe 5 to 10 seconds to figure out what you're playing?
there are certainly some teams that does. Teams that are real set-oriented and will pull it out and run a lot of stuff. They got to figure out what you're playing. It will mess with them a lot. The ones that just kind of do their thing and read and react, it's not quite as effective because it doesn't really make a big a deal. But with the ones we're playing, they're really kind of different, so there's some advantages to it, yes.
All right, what about offensively now? Are you running stuff that when it's executed right, you're getting the open look you're hoping for?
Yeah, I think that we consistently get good shots. Our issue when we don't score is really typically careless turnovers or just making the wrong play, but we consistently get good shots. I mean, we're averaging close to 80 points a game, so it's not too bad. It's not a lot to complain about.
Exactly. That's why I asked it, because I know you're averaging great numbers, so I was just asking about the sets, the execution of it, and so forth.
Right. No, it's good. It's not where we want it to be yet, which is a good thing. We can do better. Yeah. And there's things we worked a lot looking today, like little things we can clean up about how we're feeding the post and where the ball's driving and spacing like that. But for the most part, as long as we share the ball and have balance between inside drives and jumpers, we got a chance to put up a lot of points.
Inside, how do you feel about Nana Fallon and how he's played for you inside?
He's done a good job. I think with everyone there's room for improvement, but he's given us a good presence in there, someone we can throw it to get points. And whenever you have someone you can throw it to inside, it's not just him. There's DJ McClay. I think we're going to get Ben Oberfeld back here soon. But anytime you can throw it into those guys, it draws attention. It makes it easier on the guys on the perimeter.
There's X amount of time, Nathan, you can have with a team. I think everybody knows that. I think it's, 20 hours a week, and the games count as 3 hours and so forth. I got it. How much are they expected to do on their own in terms of extra shots, film study, and what do you want them doing on their own that then helps you once you get to practice?
Well, I think the first and most important thing they need to do on their own is take care of their health. They need to get sleep. They need to eat properly. It's a long season, so everyone's banged up. They need to get in the training room, get their treatment. That's first and foremost. And then you talk about shots and stuff. Certainly, you've got to get in and get shots up. You can't get in practice times. You can't go for 2.5 hours in practice to get all those shots up. You got to cut it back some. But they need to find time to get on their own and make shots, get to the free throw line, make free throws so they get those shots up. You're looking at, from practice time, we don't want to be on the floor much more than an hour and a half, if that long at all right now. And then we're probably going to do between 20 and 30 minutes of film a day. So they're looking at 2 hours. And then that doesn't take into account. You got to remember, they got to come over and go to the training room and get taped and do all that stuff afterwards. So even when you're only practicing for an hour and a half, you're looking at 3 hours of gym time. If you really want to be good, you've got to find time to get in and get those shots off and make those free throws so that you're getting enough reps. The only way to do those things well is to get reps at them. And just with the way practice is structured and timing, you can't get them in there for 3 hours a day right now. They got to find time to get in on their own. And how much, it depends on how badly you want it. You got to do enough that you can make the shots and make the free throws when time comes.
Scouting report. How do you like to divide up the scouting responsibilities, and what are some of the essentials in a scouting report that you try to get out? Because you are dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds, and there's a percentage they can absorb.
Right. Well, the way we do it is my assistants, I have three of them in operations. I've got the three assistants, split them up evenly, so they aren't usually typically doing more than one a week, so they've got time to put into it and really look at it. And we want to look hard at personnel, make sure we understand what everyone does well and what we can take away. And then a lot like Coach Belichick says, we want to figure out what they do best and not let them do that and make them go to something else. So if it's using ball screens, we want to make them do something else. So they're great in transition. We want to make sure we're back and make sure they can do something else. So you want to do those things. And there's always going to be a few sets here and there you want to get familiar with so your guys know how you're defending those. And then you need to look at what they're doing defensively so that you know how to attack it as well.
How much of a percentage of you working with your players, ballpark here, is about you? And then when you finally get to it, how much is it about them?
I'd say most of it's about them. Coaching's great, obviously, and coaches get a lot of credit. But at the end of the day, the players got to make the plays. It's about them. It's about getting them, putting them in the position. I mean, as a coach, you got to put them in a position to make that they can be successful with their skill sets. But at the end of the day, they got to make plays. And there's some stuff that happens on the court that it's a surprise. But never fails. Something's going to happen, and they've got to be able to react to it. They got to keep flying around. They got to keep flying and adjust to it on the fly. There aren't enough timeouts to fix everything. So a lot of it is about getting them to the point where they feel comfortable in every situation they go into in a game. Coach Olson, Lute Olson, said it once. He said he used to look at coaches jumping up and down, screaming on the sideline throughout the game, and he sat there wondering what had they done all week. And I think that's pretty good. That's a pretty good point. You need if you got to do all that stuff, you've clearly not prepared them. For the situations, and you got to be able to handle those. They need to be able to handle a lot of those situations without them. Now, certainly, you're going to take time out. There's going to be adjustments to go on, but there's going to be several things that are going to happen in the game where they're going to have to be able to adjust on the fly.
What's it been like for you as a coach this year operating with one fewer timeout in a game?
You know what? I'm not a big timeout guy. I typically have one, so it's not been a big deal. Really, the hardest adjustment or the toughest adjustment is not being able to call it on the fly. And having
to
rely
getting
on players
to do it.
We got to work on getting their attention so that they know when they get it up that you want to call it, so that you can get that call. That's really been the biggest adjustment. I mean, it's been – I obviously played when it was like that, but it's been a while. It's taken a little bit of an adjustment period getting back to that.
Well, Lafayette and BU on the road this week before back-to-back home games. Best of luck this week on the road to two of the newer Patriot League teams.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Enjoy your week.
Hey, you have a great week, too, Coach. We'll talk about two wins next week.
Thank you.
All right. Nathan Davis, head basketball coach at Bucknell. Bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated. We'll talk Penn State football recruiting. We'll take a break. Back with more as Kevin tries to talk himself out of another argument. You know, it's part of the entertainment on my end. Is listening to you argue with yourself.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I give you something to brighten your day.
You argue with yourself. Do you realize? I'll sit back sometimes. You'll say, Kevin.
I debate myself quite a bit, actually. That's why I never lose.
You notice I rarely interrupt you because
it's too entertaining.
Yeah, and you kind of fly all over the place.
Story of my life.
The Steeler argument at the beginning about the field goal. You either kick it or you don't. So if you want to kick it, explain to me why you want to kick it. If you don't want to kick it, explain to me why you don't want to kick it. If you want to play the field position game, so be it. No, there's no answer that's right. To your credit, you took all sides and talked yourself out of each one.
I like to cover all my bases.
I mean, I'd like to play back that part. Now, I didn't kick the field goal, but, you know, the field position thing. Now, it's a field position thing. I still gave it up. And they would have given up the field position if he missed the field. I go, yeah.
But you got to understand, I mean, you know, if they would have kicked the field goal and given him the ball at about the 40-yard line, it would have been the average starting position for every other drive.
Okay. This. You with a 40-second clock would be, how many delayed games are we going to get here? Because you talked yourself, I had a play call, but there was some negatives of the play call. You know, if he throws it over the middle, it might get picked off. Okay, delay a game, 5-yard penalty, just call one. Let's see how it goes. I mean, I don't have to argue with you. You argue with yourself.
I do it for you.
Really, there are times when you're doing that where I'm like, I got my feet up, I'm on rest.
Just for the record, I never had a delay of game penalty because I was undecided on what play to call.
Kevin, you coached little kid football. There wasn't a play clock.
No, there was. There is. You don't know what it is either. That's the tough part because you don't have a play clock to go by. But we did have a play clock. We did have the same amount as in high school.
You don't know what it is.
No, because in youth football, they didn't have the play clock on the board a lot of the. There were one or two places that did have a play clock. If you played they played one of the playoff games, the Super Bowl games for those divisions, they played up at Bloomsburg University, so you did have a play clock there.
Okay, so how old were these kids?
Let's see, 8 to 13.
And how many passes did you throw in a game?
Oh, we threw a lot. We were spread. We did a lot of spread formation.
How come nobody's hired you?
I said we did a lot of spread formation and threw it. I didn't say we were successful doing it. You got to understand, if you complete a 10-yard pass play, that's like a 40-yard pass play in real football.
How come nobody's hired you?
I don't know. I don't understand it. I haven't applied. Maybe that's what it is.
What is it about your decisiveness with little kid football that gets lost when you get to this stage?
That gets lost when you get...
Because you talk yourself out of every argument.
I don't have enough time to think at that level.
I'll have people say to me, "You were arguing with Kevin." I said, "You realize that I didn't say anything." He said, "Well, that's right. You didn't."
The best one though is we're running short on time, and I'm like, just run 11, just go spread 11.
What?
I'm like, spread 11. Go double-double, okay, 11. What's an 11? Who's the one back? That's me. Where's the one hole? Right in front of me. There you go. Go get him. He goes, "Hey, I like that play." And then he runs up, runs it, and runs a 10-yard play. And he goes, "Can we call that one again?" I love Brandon. He was funny.
Why weren't you hired by someone?
I think it was too emotional.
Right. Too emotional? How emotional would you get?
I'd rather not say.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, it wasn't bad emotional. It wasn't bad emotional.
Like, how emotional in terms of...
Oh, boy. How did I get myself into this?
No, well, no. I'm curious now. I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk.
I understand.
How emotional were you versus anger versus euphoria?
Oh, anger? No. There was not really much of an anger issue there.
Okay, then what was the emotion? What was the emotion in?
Because I didn't want to let the kids down. I didn't want to call a play that they were not capable of doing, and therefore causing a turnover.
But that's any coach. Any coach tries to put their players in the best position to win.
I called a tight end goal one time in my own territory, and it was a pick six. It was not a good moment.
Was it a play your quarterback could execute?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, that happens then. He's, you know, I always have a theory on this.
Okay.
Sometimes the other guy makes a really good play.
Yeah, but I didn't want to look at it that way.
So, you lost the game for your team.
Oh, no. We won that game.
Oh, no. I mean, you regret that call.
Yeah, it was one call that I thought, yeah. At the time, it was a lot worse.
Have you ever had other coaches evaluate your coaching style?
Not that I'm aware of.
Did you ever go to other coaches for advice?
Oh yeah, we always talked on the sideline between our coaching staff what we were going to do.
No, I'm talking about other coaches, like a high school coach.
That's
a friend of yours.
I don't remember. I don't think so. I don't think I did. Well, you got to understand, I was an assistant, so when I was only head coach and calling plays, it was only 4 games in the season. It was when the head coach went on his hunting trip that I ended up getting the reins.
And did you win?
2-2. I wasn't 2-2. The boys were 2-2.
Oh, so if it was just you, it'd be 4-0. All right, we'll come back. I see how it works.
I tried to take the high road, and what happened? I fell off the cliff.
We'll come back with more in a moment on this Radio 1070 WKOK.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
This year's New Year's resolution at Sunbury Motors Kia is easy. In 0% APR financing for up to 66 months on all remaining 2015 models, as well as the 2016 Sereno, Sportage, Sedona, Forte, and the iconic Soul. And remember, all new Kias come with an easy 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. So with a huge selection of quality Kias, all clearly sale priced, backed by one of the best warranties in the business, well, it just doesn't get any easier than this to ring in the new year with a new Kia. So resolve to come down to the Strip in Hummel's Wharf or at Sunbury Motors. 2016 is going to be easy at Sunbury Motors Kia. SMC, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Well, this is the last of the Brown connection at Penn State. Johnny Bach, Rip Engel, Joe McMullen, Joe Paterno, all from Brown to Penn State. And you do know who Joe's basketball coach at Brown was, right? Joe Paterno's?
No.
Oh.
I don't.
Should this is I? One of the great. Oh yes, it's one of the great trivia questions of all time. Joe Paterno's basketball coach at Brown was Weeb Eubank.
Oh, I did hear that. I just didn't remember it.
Who coached the Colts to the 1958 and 1959 NFL championships and coached the Jets to the Super Bowl III championship? Weeb Eubank was and will always be the only coach to ever coach an AFL and NFL champion and a Super Bowl champion. The only one ever. He was Joe's basketball coach at Brown.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
The 60s, I'm closing fast, man. There are people already lining up for jobs. All right. Wow. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show, like every Monday, brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You want your insurance agent to be somebody, A, you trust, B, you've developed a relationship with, C, dependable when it comes time, when everything's up against it, you want to make sure you have insurance that's the right insurance, the right price. Oh, and by the way, there's a claim that they are there. They are your advocate right away. I just described Purdy Insurance. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Great people, great agency. Time now for our bozo of the day. Kevin wanted to nominate the entire Steeler punting team. And it's like, we just can't make this personal, Kev.
No, I wanted to nominate the entire Cincinnati Bengals team, or at least the ones that took to Twitter.
Well, we're not going to go that route either.
All right.
Jamal Reed of Oregon State, basketball player, tripped a referee last night in a Pac-12 game. And when I mean tripped him, I don't mean inadvertently. He tripped him deliberately. And you look at the play, and Pirtle gets the down low. The kid, and then the ball gets knocked away. And it's a clean play. It's a clean strip. He goes to the floor, and the referee's running down the floor. And he sticks his foot out and trips him. Now, the referee, to his credit, did a great job. I think it was Tommy Nunez. I think it was Tommy Nunez was the referee. Does a great job of keeping his poise, stopping the gets up.
Conley goes over to the scoring table with another official. They look at it. They throw him out. Reed should probably be suspended by the Pac-12 for a minimum of 2 games. And I say 2 games because what they do in the Pac-12 is they block schedule. In other words, you're Arizona. I got a 2-game road trip this weekend. Well, the 2-game road trip is to Oregon State and Oregon. Or it's a 2-game road trip to Washington State, Washington. They always couple it like that, and that's how they do it in the Pac-12 for the most part. He should be suspended for 2 games. But he is the bozo of the day. It's just unconscionable what he did.
You're right. That beats everything the Bengals did, too.
Well,
even though they were poor, too, but...
Right. But, I mean, you're talking about... I mean, referees are people. He could get hurt. Not some object out there, and you know you take your frustrations out on. I'm sorry, you can't do that, and that's just wrong as wrong gets on the floor. Let's bring in Ryan Snyder from Blue White Illustrated, Rivals.com. Let's talk a little football recruiting here because it was just a big weekend for Penn State. Another big one coming up, and then a third one. Ryan, thanks. Great to have you with us.
Ryan is also a sucker for deviled eggs.
I'm not surprised. All right, it's stretch run. If this were a horse race, it's right about to the quarter pole of making the turn down the stretch. Penn State hosted one and one only this weekend, and so take us through that one.
Yeah, Levert Hill.
As everyone knows, I can't mention names, guys, okay? It's an NCAA violation.
I'm well aware, Steve.
You're aware. I'm telling the audience, so the audience understands. I can't start blurting out names left and right. It's an NCAA violation. But Ryan could blurt out all the names he wants, so go ahead.
Yeah, we've talked about it a few times. But, yeah, anyone that's been paying attention to recruiting, you should probably know the name Levert Hill by now. He was committed to Penn State for months, and, long story short, he ended up backing out of that commitment in December. His brother plays for Michigan. He has a lot of friends going to Michigan State. So, that pressure really kind of weared on him. And that's, why basically backed out of that commitment. Now, Penn State was able to get him on campus this past weekend, and everything went really well. I mean, the staff really pulled out all the stops. I mean, they did everything they can. I mean, this is really just going to come down to, whether he wants to make his own pass, or whether he's going to follow his brother's path in Michigan or follow his friends over at Michigan State. Now he is considering some other schools, USC, Clemson, a couple schools in there, but this is really going to come down to Michigan State. And I think Penn State is probably around second. I would say Michigan and Michigan State are still 1A and 1B. But, give a lot of credit to the staff. I mean, they have really done everything they can here. They've been in this race the whole time, but at the end of the day, it's tough to beat out schools that have 3, 4, 5 friends going to it, like Michigan State, or a school like Michigan, where his brother under Brady Hoke, from what I've been able to gather, wasn't always the best times for his brother, but under Harbaugh, he's really enjoyed it, and that's been something that's really put Michigan in a good light. So they're working their butt off, man, and they're going to still keep visiting with them, but it's going to be tough to pull Levert in the end.
You mentioned how he's somebody who had committed, and this is not unusual where they're 17 years old for the most part, so they change their minds and want to make sure about it. There are a couple other guys that fall into that category that have decided to also visit elsewhere. What information do you have about that?
Yeah, Michael Dunford and Andrew Pritz. Andrew's a safety out of Western PA. He went to Hickory High School. His father's an alumni here, so names should be familiar. And yeah. Michael Dunford, he's a defensive end, defensive tackle from Wayne, New Jersey. Michael went to Michigan this past weekend. Pritz went to Stanford this past weekend. I'll start with Dunford. I mean, Dunford was somebody who, I honestly thought that there was a chance he would switch his commitment this weekend, and he didn't. And that's very good for Penn State because, there's a lot of pressure on these guys when they take these visits. I mean, I'm sure Harbaugh was working on him quite a bit to try and get him to switch that. So the fact that he didn't works out in Penn State's favor, in my opinion, because he is coming to Penn State now next weekend. So, of course, he'll go home after that Penn State visit and think things over with his family for a few days. But, the fact that he didn't switch his commitment this weekend, I think that's a good sign for Penn State because I you know, I'm pretty close with Michael. I've talked to him about this a couple of times leading up to this past week, and I did think there was a chance. As far as Pritz goes, he went to Stanford this past weekend. He's actually going to go to UCLA this upcoming weekend. Now, this upcoming weekend is also Penn State's big weekend, so fans are a little concerned about that. You know, what I would say to them is I really wouldn't worry about that too much, the fact that he's not coming to Penn State next weekend. He's been here so many times. I mean, there's really not that much for him to see still. So, you know, obviously whenever you have another recruit going elsewhere, you know, that's never a good thing. But the fact that he's not coming to Penn State is just something that I don't think is a totally big deal. Now, one thing that is kind of a big deal, though, is his relationship with Tommy Bradley, who, you know, Penn State fans know well. He's a defensive coordinator at UCLA. Him and his dad both have good relationships with them, and, you know, they're going to be going out to see Tommy this weekend. So, you know, for now, Andrew is still committed to Penn State, but I do think that Stanford and UCLA have a real chance to put this commitment. You know, we'll see where he stands after this weekend, but, you know, as of right now, if I was looking at Dunfor and Pritz, I slightly lean towards Pritz as the one who will probably more likely back out. I think, I mean, they're both kind of around 50-50 right now, but I think Penn State's in a better position with Dunfor than they are with Pritz.
Is this basically, Ryan, the weekend where all the verbal commitments do come in together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve. This is the weekend where, you know, the early enrollees are already there. You know, they have four early enrollees this weekend. Those guys all came in December. Now the rest of the class will come in this weekend. So, you know, there's going to be a couple other guys, too. You know, they're going to have a few uncommitted guys on campus this weekend. And that's going to be big for Penn State. You know, they always are working really hard to make sure that they, you know, get all their committed guys on campus with some of the guys that aren't committed still. So, you know, that's going to be really big for Penn State. I think that right now, you know, out of the guys that, you know, aren't committed to Penn State, I'm looking at guys like Khalik Hudson, Damar Hamlin, Brendan Ferns, linebacker out of Ohio. Those are probably the three biggest names. There's another defensive back by Kaiser White. He's a junior college guy out of Lackawanna. So, you know, those are the four that I'm really looking at this weekend. You know, out of those guys, you know, Khalik has been someone I've been watching, but he just went to Michigan this last weekend and had a really good visit there. And I've always felt that Penn State's in a good position with DeMar, but if I had to pick, I think he's leaning towards Ohio State or maybe Pitt. Brendan Ferns is somebody, though, that I think Penn State has a real chance to pull out in the end. You know, he's been down between Penn State and West Virginia, but, you know, PSU's made a really strong push here lately. So he's someone to watch. And then Kaiser White, the junior college defensive back, you know, he's currently committed to West Virginia. Actually went to USC this past weekend, had a good visit there. You know, now he's supposed to be coming to Penn State this upcoming weekend. One thing with Kaiser to note, his coaches are at Lackawanna. They're pretty pro PSU, and that's going to work in Penn State's favor. So we'll see how it works out. But you know, out of those four guys, I think Penn State actually has the best chance with Ferns, and then Hudson. I think those are the two guys that I think Penn State has the best chance with.
Then the weekend after, if I'm judging this right, the weekend after now is the final push on the guys that you wanted. You know that. You're going to try and see you can close the class out with, if possible. Is that a fair assessment?
Correct.
About the weekend of the 29th and 30th?
Yeah, the 29th to the 31st is going to be – as of right now, I actually don't have anyone set for that weekend. Brendan Ferns is supposed to come that weekend, and he ended up pushing it up to you know, January 22nd. But we're going to have visits January 29th. You know, the staff is currently reaching out to a bunch of prospects who – you know, they've been in touch with throughout the season, but, you know, either just now recently picked up an offer or about to pick up an offer. There's a couple guys I can throw out there. One is Chicago defensive tackle Amir Watts. You know, right now I don't have him set for a Penn State visit, but I think there's a good chance Penn State will get him here. Another guy they're watching is junior college defensive tackle Brennan Thrift. He's out of Lackawanna as well. He lives out in the Pittsburgh area. He actually went to Gateway High School. And I believe he was a freshman sophomore when Terry Smith was still there. So he has ties to Terry. He actually also went to Temple when Terry was there, too. So there's a lot of ties there. A couple other guys, Sean Foster, offensive lineman out of the Midwest. He's someone to keep an eye on. So, you know, there's going to be a couple offers that go out here in the next, you know, 5 to 10 days. And I expect Penn State to not only, you know, have a chance at some of these guys, but, you know, also get them on campus there in that final weekend.
And Penn State has not, through circumstances the last couple of years, had a scholarship kicker. Where does that stand now with kickers down the stretch here?
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about Quinn Nordin lately. I think a lot of people saw the quotes about Harbaugh as soon as we sleeping over at his house. I haven't talked to Quinn, but I'm pretty sure those quotes were joking. I think they've been taken out of context a little bit. They went from a scout.com article to, over some of the major newspaper outlets and whatnot. It kind of blew up into something that it wasn't. But anyways, Quinn went to Michigan this past weekend for an official visit. He's expected to be at Penn State this upcoming weekend, and he's also going to go to Baylor that final weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I think it's going to come down to Penn State and Michigan. And, if I had to pick a school right now, I do kind of lean towards Michigan. The reporters up there at the Michigan rival site, I'll be honest, they're pretty connected up there. They're pretty good at what they do. And, they feel pretty confident that he's going to flip at some point. And Quinn's also from Michigan, so they do have some ties there. But what's really going to come down to, at least in my opinion, is next weekend. Penn State has a chance to really, show him, a good weekend, and a lot of the other commits are going to be up here. So that's going to be big for Penn State. As of right now, it looks like they have to fight to keep on some of these guys, but.
Yeah.
At the same time, if they get him up next weekend and have a good time, they'll be in good shape.
What about numbers, though? You brought up Michigan, for example, a couple of times here. How many commitments do they have to give out, and where are they on their verbals right now?
That's a good question. I'm trying to figure this out myself the past week because, as you've seen, Michigan is going after a couple of Penn State guys. Right now they stand at 23. And, with Big Ten rules, I believe they can oversign to 28, I believe is what they can technically oversign to. So, that gives them five spots still, if they want to push those limits and go all the way up to 28 to oversign three. Now, at the same time, I also know that Michigan has brought up gray shirts with some of these prospects. If your listeners aren't 100% sure what a gray shirt is, basically it's kind of like a red shirt, but instead of, getting them on campus and making sure he sits out a year, they actually just don't come to campus at all until January. January
20th. Let me give everyone the prime example of that, Jordan Norwood. Jordan Norwood was a gray shirt. He started in January after his class started. And, by the way, is still collecting checks in the three-letter league.
And he's doing pretty well, too.
Yeah, he's playing this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So, an example. So everyone knows it's up to the kid to accept it. It is not a slap in their face because it's up to you to take advantage of what you have.
Exactly. And I know this is something that I brought up with Quinn Nordin. Now, I've been trying to learn more about Dunford's situation. And from everything I've gathered so far, they haven't brought up gray shirting with Dunford. But I know that Quinn Nordin was somebody that they brought up this potential to gray shirt with. So it really is just going to kind of depend on who else Michigan gets in this class and where they stand, in that final week. There's a chance that they could just be on regular scholarship. There's a chance that, Michigan's going to ask them to go the gray shirt route. So, as of right now, like I said, they can technically sign five more, if you look at the oversign rules and all that. And, we'll kind of have to see how it shakes out. But, yeah, Michigan's definitely getting up there in numbers. That's for sure.
And also, you've done a lot of work down in the Maryland area, obviously. Mm-hmm. So give us just a feel for that area, how rich it is down there, and whether DJ Durkin's made any inroads versus what James Franklin's been able to do, who also has very deep connections down there.
Yeah. Well, Maryland is a very important state. I mean, Penn State fans know that. There's just some excellent, excellent players that are coming out of Maryland. I've always said that, as important as Pennsylvania is, Maryland and New Jersey, actually, I think New Jersey is the most important state. Maryland and New Jersey are 1A, 1B. I mean, they are extremely pivotal to Penn State. As far as DJ Durkin goes, it's actually been pretty interesting. I've seen some things from coaches over the years, but Durkin, what he's doing down there is caught my eye. Now, he's landed commitments from Terrence Davis and Richard Merritt, who are both four-star prospects, which is a very good grab, considering he's only been on the job for about a month now. They're both four-star offensive linemen. However, he's also done something that a lot of Penn State fans would probably disagree with. From what I've gathered, he's also cut about half of their class. About half of Randy Etzel's current, former commitments are now no longer consider commitments to Maryland. It's not because the players backed out. It's because Durkin kind of basically said, thanks, but no thanks.
Right.
So that's very interesting to me. that can go both ways. You know, I mean, you know, right now he's looking at trying to get the best players in there as he can, and, you know, that may help him get a couple more four stars. But at the same time, you know, there's some really good schools that some of these players went with, and that's definitely going to probably impact him down the road. So that's caught my eye. I mean, he's cut about at least 6-7 of their commitments, you know, just at basically thanks for their thanks.
Ryan, thanks. Appreciate it. Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated. Now, whatever Ryan says on here, you know, do the, you know, the credit for those who follow Blue White Illustrated. He does not say anything out of turn on here that he hasn't already posted online, but some of you may not have seen what he posted online. So hopefully that clears up some of it. One recruit this past weekend in. Most of the verbal commitments that they have now, if not all, scheduled for this weekend, including the one that allegedly was going to go out to UCLA. He's going to come here instead. And then the weekend after is the closing weekend on guys they're trying to get. So that's how it looks the next couple of weekends. We'll wrap things up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Look at all these listings. This one's been around for 6 months, this one for a year. How is that going to help me?
Honey, who are you talking to?
Oh, nobody. I've just been putting a lot of effort into finding a place for our new washer and dryer, but most of these places I've researched haven't been around too long. I can't trust such an important purchase to these people.
Put that stuff away. We're going to Peter's Home Appliance Center in Sunbury. They've been in the business of selling and servicing all kinds of appliances from one of the best names in the business, GE, for over 50 years. And if you need them after the sale, they're always right there for you. No more hunting for washers, dryers, refrigerators, ranges. Peter's in downtown Sunbury has all the GE appliances we could ever need. So let's go to Peter's right now. Now what are you doing?
Checking out contractors. With all the money we'll save at Peter's, we can finally get the whole kitchen redone.
Honey.
They called it the Doberman defense. With the Chicago Bulls, the architect Johnny Bock, the former Nittany Lion head basketball coach who passed away today at 91. His granddaughter still lives here in State College. 91 years old. Probably one of the signature moments for Johnny was, I think, his last year. Marquette came in. Tubby Raymond was the coach. They were ranked third in the country. They had Butch Lee. And Penn State nearly beat them. It was Johnny's last year. Johnny coached on the Olympic team. He coached in the NBA with Phil Jackson, Tex Winter. That was really the triumphant trio there. Tex Winter with the triangle offense, Johnny Bock with the Doberman defense, and the orchestrator was Phil Jackson with the Chicago Bulls. Johnny was a war veteran. You did not in any way say anything disparaging about America around Johnny, and you never say anything disparaging about the military around Johnny. He was the kind of guy that stood at absolute attention during the national anthem. He saw death on the battlefield. As a basketball coach, he was a brilliant architect. Oh, and by the way, Johnny often used military references when it came to being a defensive architect. Johnny Bock, Brooklyn guy, deep roots here in State College. One of the great assistant coaches. He was a head coach for a couple years, with 3.5 years of the Golden State Warriors, but he was an assistant on the Golden State team in 76 and those six Bulls championship teams.